Line, center field, and that's going to get the Royals two more. Lopez scores. Merrifield scores. It is 4-0 KC with nobody out in the ninth inning.
And that is the best team in the American League right now by percentage points after last night's games. The Royals. Yes, your Kansas City Royals. The best team in the American League through 20 games of the season. 13-7, the Royals' record. They won four in a row. They've won the first three games in Detroit. Oh, they'll go for the sweep later this afternoon at 12:10 at Detroit against the Tigers. Brad Keller on the hill for the boys in blue as Carlos Santana, two-run single, providing some insurance yesterday for the Royals. And Danny Duffy was excellent again. Mike Matheny, his manager, on Duffy's performance.
Just his velocity, how he's been able to hold it, just shows that he's getting stronger. Not necessarily a trend for a guy that's been in the league for a little while, but I'd say it's command of all his pitches. He used everything really well today. His changeup was effective. Had swing and miss on the curveball. I just think he's got guys off balance, but did a nice job elevating today, too, using the top of the strike zone, especially when he got the two strikes. But he's flirting with that right spot that's hard to lay off, and he's got enough juice on it to get the swing and miss. So he's just in a really nice spot in his mind.
Duffy, right now one of the best starters in the American League, as the Royals have won 9 of last 12. Duffy's ERA is now 0.39, one earned run in 23 innings and four starts. He's been the most reliable starter for the Royals so far this year. He leads American League starters ERA, third in baseball behind the Mets' Jacob deGrom, who's .31, and the Brewers' Corbin Burns, who's .37. And we've seen Danny Duffy at times in his career have stretches where he's been dominant, and he's just not consistent enough. Duffy, so far, so good. 8 strikeouts, no walks. That's always been a problem for him, early in his career at least. 4 hits in 5 innings. He gets to win. He's now 3-1. Kyle Zimmer and Jacob Brents get holds, and Wade Davis with the final inning, but not a save opportunity, thanks to Santana's two-run single in the ninth yesterday in Detroit. Royals with 1 in the 5th, 1 in the 6th, just enough to get it done. 9 hits on the day. 2 hits are Whit Merrifield, and Santana with the two-run single for the insurance. Hunter Dozier with RBI as well, as the Royals do win again, and they're back in action again today. As we said, Brad Keller will be on the mound for the Royals. And why are they the best team in the American League now? Well, that's because the A's finally came down to earth.
That's hit well. Way back in left center, and Michael Franco's got a home run. His second as an Oriole. Bird's third of the day, and there's a little more breathing room as the Orioles go up 4-1.
A's lose to Baltimore yesterday 8-1. That snaps a 13-game winning streak. They are 14-8. The Royals 13-7. By percentage points, once again, the best team in the American League. And Josh Domont with his first save over the weekend as a big leaguer. And I've always thought that he could be the closer for the Royals. He's got the stuff to be the closer. And maybe that's what they're doing, slowly grooming him. And if you can learn, you know, from some guys that have been closers before and some of the best in the game, like Greg Holland on your staff, and also Wade Davis, who's now on the team this year, that could really bode well for Staumont to be that closer for the Royals. So once again, Royals today against the Tigers. Tigers 7-15, Royals 13-7. Royals won 4 in a row. Brad Keller, which version of Keller will we get? The one that was great against the Angels, or the one that's been really bad in his other 3 starts? We shall see. But if he gets things put together, some of this rotation looks pretty solid. But there's going to be your ups and downs. There's going to be injuries. You know, Brady Singer looked great the other day against the Tigers, but he owns the Tigers. For some reason, he pitches great against the Tigers. But it's good to see what he's been able to do. Royals have had to deal a few little injuries here and there. This is interesting. Second time this has happened already this season, where the Royals have placed a reliever on the injured list, and then a day later have changed it. Staumont was one. Now Greg Holland is the other, who was put on the injured list with no reason given. He was reinstated ahead of Saturday's afternoon game. So it's interesting. I don't know if it's a COVID situation or what, but they're not really releasing that information.
Maybe they have to go through the protocols there. That might be it. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what it is. Just make sure you're cleared from COVID and you've been in isolation maybe.
So you put them on the injured list?
And I think that's kind of what they did last year, but I don't think people came off that fast, though.
I was going to say, it wasn't like one day later.
You had to, you know, pass a few, right. I think you had to pass two or three positive, or two negative, two or three negative tests, and then you could come
right. It wouldn't be that quickly, no. So that's why I don't fully understand it. There's a story on CBS Sports about how the Royals are off to a great start. They made some really interesting moves in the offseason and improved their team. They have the 2-game lead over the White Sox in the Central. They say now the Royals' odds of making the playoffs have gone up to 14.5%. Even though they led the division by 2 games, it's gone up to 14.5%. So people still aren't sold that the Royals can get this done. That's okay. People thought the same thing in 2014. They nearly won the World Series. As I've said before, I think if you want to look optimistic a bit about the Royals, Benintendi hasn't got going. Dozier hasn't got going. Soler's been up and down. And Mondesi hadn't even played yet. And then you look at the Brad Keller's really struggled. Now, Granny Duffy's been really good. Singer's been pretty solid. Those guys could come down to earth, and then Keller maybe picks up the slack. And there's going to be injuries, so you're going to have to deal with it. It's a marathon, not a sprint. But right now, the Royals' plus run differential is just +3, which means they're basically a .500 team. So right now, you know, Salvi has won 4 games for him. I mean, if Salvi doesn't do what he did at the plate, the Royals could very well be 10-10 and be right there at .500. So it's a thin line between 13-7 and 10-10, to be quite honest with you. And if they're 10-10, they would be basically in second place in this division. But right now, they've won those close games, and that's a sign of a really good team. That's what the 14-15 Royals did. They won close games, and they won yesterday 4-0. Yesterday as well, Major League Baseball's official statistician says that neither a team nor an individual pitcher will be credited with an official no-hitter in a scheduled 7-inning game of a doubleheader unless that game goes to extras. Any game of fewer than 9 innings in which a player or pitcher or pitchers do not allow a hit should be considered a notable achievement. Why would I bring this up? Yesterday, a crazy doubleheader between the Diamondbacks and the Braves, where the Braves got 1 hit in 14 innings of play. They were 1 hit in the first game, and Madison Bumgarner, remember him, Royals fans? Madison Bumgarner yesterday threw a no-hitter through 7 innings. But that was it. The doubleheaders are 7-inning games. And now they say that you have to throw 9 innings to get a no-hitter. Bumgarner's gym on Sunday, there have been, including his gym yesterday, there have been 26 individual complete games that lasted less than 9 innings in which the pitcher did not allow a hit. The most recent was Boston's DeVern Hanczak, you bet, you know him, who threw a rain-shortened 5-inning no-hitter against Baltimore October 1st of 2006. So Bumgarner does not get credit for a no-hitter, even though he did get credit for a complete game shutout. So it's a complete game shutout, but doesn't get credited for an official no-hitter. Your thoughts? Should he or shouldn't he?
Listen, I think he should. If Major League Baseball has now established for sure that this is a game and it counts as a full game,
well, then that means you should be okay with a rain-shortened game that goes 5 1/3, and you say it should be a no-hitter as well. To be consistent with your argument, you should say that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just calling you. You said this is Major League Baseball recognized this as a complete game, as they do when a rain-shortened game at 5 1/3, whatever it might be, 5.5 innings, if it's official, and a guy's throwing a no-hitter, you're telling me that that should be a no-hitter as well.
There's different circumstances.
Well, it's different circumstances, but it's a complete game.
Yeah, it is.
You just said it. Major League Baseball recognized a complete game.
What I'm saying is there are different circumstances. There is no way that game can go more than 7 innings. It wasn't rain.
Actually, it can go more than 7 innings, extra innings.
Not if they've scheduled the doubleheader that day.
If they're tied after innings in game two, it can go more than seven innings.
What I'm saying is, once he's established the no-hitter is what I'm saying. Like, it's over, right? Can't go more than 7 innings based on the parameters that are put together if your team's ahead after 7 innings.
Okay, right.
That's what I'm saying. This cannot go 8 innings if they're winning and they've won the game at 7, right?
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Is they've established these games count now. They're the ones that made these rules to shorten them to 7 innings. Here's what I don't like. Here's what I don't like about this circumstance. That circumstance of a 5 1/3, I can understand because it was rained out, and then later it was deemed it was a complete game because they weren't able to get back out onto the field. Okay, this is over at 7 innings, and it's deemed a complete game by Major League Baseball because this is what they've done with their doubleheaders now. Teams can't do anything about it. Well, here's what I don't like about it is, okay, you can say that you've established that a 9-inning game is what you need to get to, right? A complete 9-inning game. Mm-hmm. There's pitchers that have pitched 8 innings and gotten no hitters. Sometimes you don't have to go out for the other half of the inning if you've already won the game.
Mm-hmm.
The home team's up.
Right.
8-0. Or road team's up 8-0.
Well, that's not true.
That's not true.
Your point isn't true.
And I'm thinking about batting, not pitching.
If you have a no-hitter, that means your odds are you're ahead of the game. My mind was going to get nine at bats.
My mind was going the wrong way with that. Yes. I was thinking of hitting, not batting.
Erase what he just said, as Mike Trant once said.
You can't go nine games. You have to go nine.
You can't get a no-hitter in eight innings. It's impossible to do.
Yeah. My brain was on the different side of things when I was going through all that. But because there can be like a game you win where you didn't have to go bat in the bottom of the inning.
Right.
But I don't know. I feel like it should be deemed an accomplishment that it is. And he completed the whole game within the parameters of what baseball has told him he can do.
Right.
And I feel like they need to change that part of it personally.
Well,
I know there's a lot of people that are not going to agree with what I say there.
Well, I can see it from both sides, to be quite honest with you. I personally feel that a no-hitter should be nine innings because I don't think it's fair to all the other guys that threw a no-hitter in nine innings. I also feel like a guy that goes nine innings and then goes into a 10th inning and then gives up a hit, I feel like that should still be a no-hitter after nine because they say nine innings, but technically, it's 0-0. There's guys that have been over time, especially in the old days, where no hitters, and they had to go back out for the 10th or 11th because nobody could score, and they didn't get credit for a no-hitter. So there's another argument on the other side of it going even more than nine innings. But I do believe that it's unfair to any other guy that's thrown a no-hitter that's noted for a no-hitter. I don't think it's fair to Nolan Ryan or Justin Verlander that Madison Bumgarner goes seven innings and gets credit for a no-hitter. Because first of all, you need six more outs. Nine innings is 27 outs. Seven innings is 21 outs. And how many no hitters have we seen? I mean, you're talking hundreds over the history of baseball that get spoiled in the eighth and ninth innings.
Yeah.
I mean, we got a ton that get happen with one or two outs in the ninth inning. And so it's easier, obviously, to throw a no hitter in seven innings than there is nine innings. And so that's why I kind of feel like it needs to be a nine inning no hitter. Having said that, though, if you have judged or determined that you're going to have doubleheader games that are seven innings long, and a guy does, and he gets credit, by the way, yesterday for a complete game. He gets credit for a complete game shutout, but they give it a notable achievement for a no-hitter. You know, that's where I sit here, and I totally see where you're coming from, and this, 'cause this is how I reacted initially was, well, they're the ones that said it's a seven-inning game. He threw a seven-inning game. Why should he be punished for not getting a no-hitter when you chose to shorten the game to seven innings? On the flip side, it's not fair to the guys going nine innings, and they get six more outs.
We say life's not fair.
Well, right? I know, right? But well, okay, and I know exactly. So you want to sit here and go boo-hoo-hoo for
sides,
right? Yeah. I'm gonna go boo-hoo-hoo about Madison Bumgarner life. Well, you know, life's not fair. Well, Madison Bumgarner, he didn't throw nine innings. You know, wham! I mean, that's just the way it is. Now, what's interesting, Jason Stark pointed out, the guy in the first game of doubleheader between the D-backs and the Braves got credit for a one-hitter, but he only threw seven innings. Okay, one-hitter, I mean, should that really be an actual one-hitter? Shouldn't that be a notable achievement, kind of like the no-hitter? That does seem a little bit inconsistent, no doubt. I don't think a lot of people get caught up in how many one-hitters you've thrown in your career. But to me, it's not fair to Justin Verlander, who has three no-hitters in his career, and Nolan Ryan, who threw seven, and nobody's going to touch that, by the way. That's not fair to those guys. At the same time, the rules the Major League Baseball has with these doubleheaders, shortening them, which we've talked about recently, we understand why they're doing it. We're not big fans of it, but we understand why they're doing it. Those are the rules you change. You shorten the games yourself from nine to seven. So if he goes a full game and he gets credited for a complete game and a shutout, why shouldn't he get credit for a no-hitter? I understand both sides of it. I always have felt like a no-hitter is nine innings. Flat out, and it could be a nine inning no hitter with six pitchers. It doesn't matter how many pitchers, as long as the other team didn't get a hit in 27 outs. In this case, you get 21 outs, and it's a lot harder to get those last six outs to prevent or to preserve a no hitter. But if the rules of the game are that, hey, you're playing seven innings no matter what, unless it's tied going extra innings, as you pointed out, then why shouldn't it be a no hitter? So I can see it from both sides. I think you can make a fair debate from both sides. I tend to lean a little bit towards, if you're counting it as a complete game and a shutout, well, then why doesn't it count as a no-hitter? Because to me, it shouldn't count. I don't think it should count as a shutout. I mean, if you're not going to count as a no-hitter, why should it count as a shutout? I mean, what's the – how do we – why do we suddenly change the lines?
Well, they didn't have any hits.
They didn't have any hits. Right, exactly. I like, well, it's okay. You get a shutout. You get a shutout no matter what, but you get a no-hitter. No, it's not a no-hitter. It's a notable achievement. And it's one of those things where Major League Baseball, once again, didn't prepare for these types of things.
Yeah, obviously, okay, so you give him the shutout. that's fine.
Right.
You absolutely cannot give him a complete game.
If you say he's got to throw nine. Right, I agree with that.
It's not a complete. You right. just said it's not a complete game by giving him not giving
right.
him a no-hitter.
Right.
But you've given him a complete game shutout.
Well, if you give him a complete game, don't you have to give him a no-hitter?
It's a complete game. And then a no-hitter, what?
Right, exactly. Because they're saying
that's,
the no.
That's
say,
what doesn't
right,
add
makes
up.
Sense. Right, exactly.
I can give him the shutout, whatever. Nobody right. scored any runs.
Right.
Well, nobody had any hits either.
Right. But the no-hitter. The no-hitter is not complete unless you throw nine innings, but the game was complete and gets a complete game.
Yeah.
And he gave up no hits during that complete game. Thus, shouldn't it be a no-hitter? If you explain it that way, I agree.
We can argue on both sides of it.
Absolutely.
I'm not, like, disappointed that he didn't get it.
No,
it's not going to make me lose sleep or anything like that.
If it was
that.
A Royals pitcher, would you change your mind?
They moved the sticks here. Like, they moved what it meant.
Yes.
To finish a game in a doubleheader. Mm-hmm. They did that. Not anybody else. Mm-hmm. Not the rain. Well, I mean, the rain forced the doubleheader probably the day before.
Right.
But on this day, this game had to be stopped when it did.
Right.
Because it was over, according to the Major League Baseball's rules.
Right. The one thing baseball can hide behind, though, is that, according to the official statisticians with Eli Sports Bureau, no no-hitter is a no-hitter until there's been nine innings. It can't be any fewer than nine innings. So I guess that's a way of covering their rear. Although I think they should have made it very clear before they put in these seven-inning no-hitters that, hey, here's the deal. If a guy goes a shutout, seven innings, it will be counted as a shutout. It will be a complete game, but no-hitter has to be 27 outs. You know, they could have added to that. Now, they didn't, and this technically covers them. I mean, it says, you know, anything fewer than nine innings is a notable achievement. Same thing for rain-shortened no-hitters. So that's what they're saying. But if you sit here and tell me that a seven-inning game is a complete game, but you say he's got to throw nine innings to get a no-hitter, then to me you're telling me he didn't have a complete game because you're requiring nine innings to be labeled a no-hitter. It is very confusing, and it's baseball, so why should it surprise me?
I mean, add it to the list of things that we don't that we argue about. Should it be this way or and then that people are going to complain about it if you actually give them a no-hitter. All the people that like the purists are going to be like, I don't care what the rules are.
Armando Galarraga, what was his name, the pitcher for Detroit?
No, I think it was Armando.
Okay, he had a perfect game ruined by Jim Joyce's blown call at first. That should have been overturned and he should be given a perfect game.
That
game should be a perfect game. There was no replay, apparently, in that game at that time. And replay would overturn that. He would have had a perfect game. That was the exact final out of the game. That was a perfect game. And they don't recognize that as a perfect game, which is atrocious to me. That was a perfect game, but they don't count it as a perfect game. And this, they say, is not a no-hitter. I mean, anyway, it's baseball. It's clear as mud.
That rule that Elias is putting forth was based on everything that's happened up till now, right? This is the first time MLB's ever done this, where they are required to only play seven inning games as part of a doubleheader.
Baseball,
now, again, those can go into extra innings, but
baseball didn't, what's the word I'm looking for? They did not, make it known how that was going to be handled in regards to seven-inning games, unless they thought this would cover it. Anyway.
And some have – I think the Royals had somebody last year in a doubleheader that had, like, 5 2/3 that was – then they were already starting to talk about it, like, not on broadcast probably, but on Twitter and stuff. Like, this won't count.
Right.
I can't even remember who that was. It might have been Singer actually had a legit attempt at a no-hitter last year.
Yeah, maybe it might have been Keller. Actually, it was Keller, I think.
It was,
I think I remember that now.
Somebody in
through five innings, he hadn't given up a hit through five innings. I think I remember that.
First of a doubleheader, or it's a doubleheader, it's seven-inning games.
So. Right. The Padres became the first team to win a game last night, despite being on the road, facing a team with a winning percentage over 700, trailing by six or more runs in the seventh inning or later, since the Giants did so against the Cubs in Wrigley in 1918.
Well,
the Dodgers and the Padres are probably the two best teams in the National League. They're in the same division. And the Padres are down six yesterday after seven innings, came back 1-11 innings, and swept the Dodgers. But the Dodgers still have the lead in the National League West. Eric Hosmer with the decisive sac fly in the 11th to win it. Hosmer's one of the leaders on those teams. And he says, we respect what the Dodgers do. We respect what they've done. But we're not scared of them. And we're trying to win the division. And we hope to meet them again on a bigger stage later this year. Fernando Tatis, did you see his home runs the other day against Trevor Bauer? Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you, we've been talking about how Major League Baseball needs something exciting about their game. Major League Baseball needs... Fernando Tatis is a guy they should shove out across the masses.
Absolutely.
Because, first of all, he'll rile up people that don't like their old traditionalists and don't like a guy having flair, but he's still going to get a reaction from those people who don't even like him if you shove him out in the national media with a whole bunch of commercials promoting Major League Baseball. He's on the cover of the Major League Baseball video game now on EA Sports. But also, he's got the Latin America loves him, and he's got a wide reach, I think, as a player. And he's a young player who got a big contract with the Padres. He plays shortstop, one of the biggest positions in baseball. And he has home run power. He can steal. He's an all-around five-tool athlete. And so Trevor Bauer, let's set this up. Trevor Bauer is now a pitcher for the L.A. Dodgers, signed in free agency. Used to be with the Indians, was with the Reds last year, won the National League Cy Young a year ago. And he talked about how in spring training he would close one eye, thought it helped him prepare for the regular season, and he'd throw some innings with one eye closed. So Fernando Tatis the other day against Trevor Bauer, it was Padres and the Dodgers, he smashes a home run. And so between first and second, he turns to his dugout, not the Dodgers dugout, turns to his dugout, and he covers one eye while he's running around the bases. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, obviously trolling Trevor Bauer, who is the pitcher who's on the mound and just gave up the home run. Then four innings later in the sixth inning, Tatis hits another shot off of Bauer again. If you didn't see it, you can go to the highlights and go MLB.com. You'll find it. Search it on Google. And he does a Conor McGregor strut, you know, to home plate. And there's some fans, because there's limited fan capacity, that are booing. You know, some of them you can hear booing. Others are cheering. And Trevor Bauer, to his credit, and I give him a lot of credit, after the game they're asked about it, and he goes, I think it's great.
He goes, absolutely.
Yeah. He goes, listen. He goes, I don't understand why guys are plunking people because they gave up a homer. You're the one that gave up the homer. If you want to do something about it, then get him out. Mm-hmm. He goes, I think it's great for baseball. He goes, I love that the fact he celebrated. I have no problem with it. And the old traditional fuddy-duddy 60-year-old fan, and that's the average viewer of baseball, probably has a problem with it. And this is why your game is starting to get outdated. You need guys like this to have that flair. Major League Baseball needs to let them be themselves. We talk about the National Football League. They've opened it up a little bit. Remember, they were the no-fun league. Now they allow more celebrations and things when you score touchdowns. They've loosened up a little bit. Fans want to see the player's personality a little bit, okay? Now, I don't need to have Michael Irvin, I remember back in the day, you know, celebrating a first down when his team's down 20 or up 20. But the point being is that, you know, you score a touchdown, you want to do a backflip in the end zone, cool. If there's nobody within 10 yards of you and you're going to do a backflip like Tyreek Hill, you know what? People don't like it and it's too much flair. Then stop him from getting in the end zone. You know, you don't like a guy jumping over from the one-yard line and then doing a dance? Well, then stop him. I mean, you don't like – and especially in professional sports. If you don't like it, then stop it. I mean, if you score a touchdown, if you are able to do something significant in a pro sport, why not celebrate it? And it gets your players excited as well. And so Latin American players have always had flair. That's how they grew up. That's their culture. And people in America, let's just be honest, the white American old-time baseball fan doesn't fully understand it yet and maybe never will get it. Mm-hmm. Well, that's just not the way the game's played. Well, that was back in the day. You know what? You know, back in the day, you know, we didn't change pitchers like 16 times in a game. And the guys would throw 150 pitches and go a complete game. The game's changed. You have to understand that. But in regards for baseball to market their product, they need more guys like, well, Manny Machado's one too, who's on that team as well. Fernando Tatis. They need guys to have some flair. I'm not talking about, like, if Tatis would have run around the bases and he would have, like, pointed at Bauer and flipped him off and did the one-eye thing, okay, that's probably too much, obviously. That's really rubbing it in and it's mocking it. But when he did what he did, it was fun. He didn't look right at Bauer when he did it. He did a strut home. You know, to me, there are guys, I saw Salvador Perez's home run trot. It took him like half an hour to get around the bases. Now, isn't that kind of showing up a guy when you take your sweet?
Yeah.
I mean, it's part of baseball, so it's accepted, right? That slow little trot around the bases. Why not just walk around the bases? What's next? Crawl around the bases. You going to throw you out because you crawl around the bases? You still touch each base? Who cares? I bet there's no rule in Major League Baseball that says you have to walk around the bases in a home run.
No.
I'm guessing. That'd be funny if somebody did it. So there's all kinds of ways to have some flair, have some excitement, and that's what Major League Baseball needs. The sport of baseball needs excitement. You need that flair. And I'm not saying that kids need to, at the high school or college level or peewee level, need to do the whole big bat flip stuff and so forth and so on like that. But I'm saying when you get to the professional level, I think you're paid a lot of money. There's guys getting paid a lot of money to get you out. And if you hit a home run against a guy and you want to have a little fun on the base pads like Fernando Tatis, I say go for it. Because I'm telling you, my son checked out that highlight. He's 14. He saw the highlight. And we've been talking about this recently on the show. You're going to get that stuff. You want that stuff. What stands out is something with flair, something that is entertaining, okay? And that got people to talking about Padres-Dodgers. Even some people didn't even know the Padres-Dodgers are playing each other. I don't know that they're two big rivals now. That's good for baseball. And some of the old fuddy-duddy fans, and yes, I probably was one of them at one point, didn't understand that. But you got to understand the bigger picture for baseball. You need characters. You need a little flamboyance, believe it or not. And, you know, you see it in basketball, guys with dunks, you know, they hang on the rim for a split second. Yeah, they can get teed up from time to time. There's guys that, you know, do the old three when they make a three-pointer. There's a little flair to it. And that's okay. It gets the bench all excited, and it creates a little bit of momentum for your team. And I don't think there's anything wrong with celebrating. Now, if you're going to, you know, dunk the ball and then you say blank you to the guy you dunked on, okay, yeah, I'm okay with a technical there, okay? I am, because I think that's just showing – that's unsportsmanlike. But what Tatis did the other day I thought was fine. He didn't get in trouble for it. And the guy that gave up the home runs doesn't have a problem with it, so why should anybody else? But the old fuddy-duddy fan or the fuddy-duddy, you know, talk show host or the fuddy-duddy talking head on ESPN or Fox FS1, who, of course, will take the opposite argument just to have a show, even though they truly don't believe it, will tell you and say all this crazy stuff about how that's not good for the game. Of course it's good for the game. Jeez.
Trevor Bauer, you're talking about the guy that took a baseball and threw it over center field wall at Coppin Stadium
right.
So, he understands flamboyance and putting on a show, right, of all that. And I know that was in frustration, but
sure.
That's who he is. He brought boxing gloves to the Royals game. Remember that? When the Royals had the straight out of Coppin stuff going on?
Right.
He brought boxing gloves into the dugout.
Yes,
like, he was, like, having fun with it. That's who he is. And I think, again, like you said, and I said that the other day when we were talking about the whole soccer baseball thing, who's passing who here, I said Major League Baseball needs to market their stars. And
yes.
The first name I said was Fernando Tatis.
Yes, absolutely.
I said, Mike Trout is the guy that everybody knows.
Right.
The first name I said, Fernando Tatis. He's so young.
Yes.
So energetic.
Right.
And just, he loves the game, I can tell you that right now.
Right.
But he's going to show his passion for winning, too,
right,
and for having success. And he's at the top of my list right now of guys that I would want to market.
No, no question.
Baseball. And he has been ever since, last year when he joined.
Yep.
And then this year, with the Padres and all, everything they got going on down there is something that should definitely be seen by people.
I agree with you.
If you want energy and you want young people to come to your sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's actually good for baseball, but I know the traditionalist fan will not like it, and eventually their sport will die off. I'm not gonna say 5-10 years from now. I'm just saying eventually it's gonna get passed by other sports. So you better embrace it. All right, local sports before we get to the Chiefs' big move.
Yeah, quite a bit of track and field from over the weekend. If you missed any of the results, you can find them at ncksports.com from Friday's action. We'll tell you some of the highlights there. The Kaiser Relays in Osborne on the girls' side. Shelby Ford of Lincoln took the gold in the 400. J.C. Vath won the 16 and 3200 meter golds. Lauren Dewar took four golds there on Friday. 100 meter hurdles, 300 hurdles, javelin, and the pole vault. Osborne won the 4x4. Tipton won the 4x8 on the girls' side as well. On the boys' side, St. John's the team champion. Osborne was third. Tyler Good of Lincoln first in the 100 meter dash. Braden Perez of St. John's first in the 200. Jay Schoen of Lakeside took first in both the 400 meter and the high jump. Reagan Bales of Osborne winning the 800 and 1600. Caleb Eiler of St. John's in first in the 3200. Also, St. John's 4x100-meter relay team of Blake Perez, Ben Thompson, Jared Eitzman, and Braden Perez broke their own school record in the 4x1 at 45-14. Osborne won the 4x8. St. John's won the 4x4 as well on the boys' side. Grant Myers of Rock Hill is winning the pole vault, and Blake Perez winning the long jump for St. John's. Also, the Phillipsburg Invitational in track and field on Friday. And the girls' side, one gold medal winner from the area. That was J.C. Carter of Beloit in the discus. And on the boys' side, gold medals went to Jacob Porter of Beloit in the 1600. Brenna Walker winning the 300 hurdles and javelin for the Trojans. And Grady Seifert won the discus for Beloit. For Smith Center, gold medals in 4x8, 110-meter hurdles for Garrett Winter. And Wyatt Overmiller won the 3,200-meter run gold medal. So that's what happened on Friday. Coming up today, we have some makeup track and field. Hill City Invitational this afternoon at 3 o'clock. St. John's, Thunder Ridge, and Smith Center are competing there. Concordia is at the Smoky Valley Invitational at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Northern Plains League golf meet going on today. It was rescheduled for today. That's at 3 o'clock this afternoon. The Concordia Invitational at 3 o'clock as well, with Beloit and Concordia competing. And Beloit baseball is at Republic County today in NCAA League action. Doubleheader starts at 4 o'clock this afternoon. We told you about Lauren Dubert, who won 4 gold medals in track the other day there at Osborne Track and Field. Just coming out this morning, she has been named to the Kansas Basketball Coaches Association All-Star roster for the blue team on the girls' side. So congratulations to Lauren Dubert, a KBCA basketball all-star. Those all-star games are going to take place on June 19th at Kansas Wesleyan University there, maybe Arena in Salina on the campus of KWU. So again, congratulations to Lauren Dubert. She's really the only area athlete, as far as even all through ncksports.com, what we would cover, but one other league team, Lily Schubert from Trigo, also was selected to the game. And she'll play on the same team as Lauren's on the blue team. So, again, that's a look at the KBCA All-Star Games. And later on here this morning, we will have the full rosters posted at ncksports.com. So keep an eye out for that. And again, All-Star Games June 19th in Solano.
Hey, you want to update people on a couple of kids that are doing well at Wichita State?
Oh, yeah. Lauren Dubert, we talked about. Her brother Davis Dubert is actually one of those. And then Brady Paulin doing very well as well for Wichita State. And they really competed very good in the high jump there Saturday at Arkansas, University of Arkansas meet that they competed in. And both had PRs in the high jump. Brady Paulin actually won the event with a jump of 6 feet 11. And Davis Dubert finished in third place in that event and PR'd in that one as well, and his was 6 feet 8 and 3 quarter. Davis also PR'd in the javelin that day, throwing 211 feet. I think he said his original PR was like 206, about 5 feet further on the javelin for Davis there over the weekend as well. So, yeah, they're having a lot of success to St. John's graduates at Wichita State Track and Field.
All right, congrats on all of that. We have a new champion in women's volleyball.
Stumler out of system for the championship. Allie Stumler leads Kentucky to their first ever title, having the career match of her life.
So Kentucky beats Texas in 4 sets to win. It's the first team ever from the SEC to win a national volleyball championship. That's pretty amazing when you think about that. Mm-hmm. So Kentucky winning it all in women's volleyball. Another big note in women's sports, and that would be Kim Mulkey leaving Baylor to go to LSU. I have to admit, I don't think many people saw this one coming. LSU women's basketball team pulled off a surprising hire yesterday when announced Baylor's Kim Mulkey will be its next coach. Mulkey owns 3 national titles from her time at Baylor, is a Louisiana native who played collegiately at Louisiana Tech. Mulkey is expected to be introduced tonight in a press conference. She will replace Nikki Vargas, who resigned after 10 seasons as coach to pursue another opportunity. LSU was just 9-13 a year ago. Mulkey is 58 years of age. She was a coach of the Bears at Baylor from 2000 to the end of this past season. Her record is amazing, 631 wins, just 104 losses. She was previously on staff at Louisiana Tech from 1985 to 2000, served as assistant on the program's 1988 national championship team. She was also part of 2 national championships at Louisiana Tech as a player. Though she never played at LSU and has not worked for the school during her Hall of Fame career, she's no stranger to Baton Rouge. Her son Kramer was a star baseball player for the Tiger Baseball Club. So Kim Mulkey leaving Baylor to go to LSU. Listen, if this happened on the men's side, this would be like the top story.
Oh, absolutely.
This is one of the best coaches in all of America leaving unexpectedly. Nobody really saw it coming to go to Louisiana State to be a head coach at LSU. And now Baylor, who has dominated the Big 12 here recently, and for a while, actually. Now I think there's probably some people around the Big 12 going, there was an opportunity to knock out Baylor with Kim Mulkey leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens to your recruits who were going to go and play for Kim Mulkey?
Well, okay, a lot of these seniors were saying that they weren't coming back, too. So as I kind of look back at it, it's
maybe she let her on to something.
They kind of were, wondering, or maybe she tipped them off that, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be here anymore. Because there were a few of them. I mean, one of them went to the WNBA. But,
right.
I don't know. It is surprising, for sure, when you see that. But, once you kind of dig into it and understand where she's from, what her college mm-hmm. career was, and that Baylor's the only head coaching job she's ever had.
Right.
Maybe she wanted a different challenge, too, and it's easy to go back home to do that if that's what is in your heart, you know.
She was at Baylor 21 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty amazing. The Chiefs have found a new left tackle. We talked about Orlando Brown being available, that he wanted out of Baltimore. Baltimore is going to make it happen. We figured Baltimore would want way too much for Orlando Brown, and we figured the Ravens wouldn't be dumb enough to trade Orlando Brown to the Chiefs. Well, they apparently are. Now, we say dumb enough. Who knows? We might find out that they end up getting the best thing out of this trade, but I don't know what's there not to like about this trade if you're a Chiefs fan. The Ravens acquired 3 picks in this week's NFL draft, a first-rounder, the Chiefs' first-round pick, 31 overall, second-to-last pick in the first round. They get the Chiefs' third-rounder, and they get a fourth-rounder, as well as a fifth-round selection in 2022. The Chiefs get a starting left tackle in Orlando Brown, and then the Chiefs will get Baltimore's second-round pick this year and a sixth-rounder in 2022. So the Chiefs will have 2 picks, 58 and 64 overall. You can get 2 real good players in the second round for the Chiefs and fill some voids, even though they traded their first-round pick. Orlando Brown turns 25 on May 2nd, which would be just in a week. He started 42 games for Baltimore, of course played at the University of Oklahoma, since being a third-round pick in the 18 draft. He's allowed no sacks or quarterback hits and 700 snaps at left tackle last season. He is one of 4 offensive tackles selected to the Pro Bowl each of the past 2 seasons. He got a ringing endorsement on his way out of Baltimore from defensive end Calais Campbell, who tweeted, "Chiefs are getting a straight-up beast, great teammate, the kind of guy you look forward to going to battle with." Now, the Chiefs, now, to summarize what they've done already in this offseason, and we haven't even gotten to the draft. And why did this happen? Well, because the Chiefs got pulverized on the offensive line in Super Bowl 55 against the Buccaneers, and Mahomes was running for his life, granted, with backup right and left tackles, as we pointed out, with injuries. The Chiefs, what they've done this offseason, they have replaced basically their whole entire offensive line. Their center is now Austin Blythe. It's a 1-year deal from the Rams. He's 28 to replace Austin Ryder. They got the big-time pickup, the best guard in free agency on the market, Joe Tooney from New England. They were able to pick him up and pay him a lot of money to be their left guard. They signed Kyle Long out of retirement. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif is expected to return after he opted out of the 2020 season to serve on the front lines against the COVID-19 pandemic. So right now you're looking at Tardif as your right guard after opting out last year. Kyle Long is your backup guard, either the backup Tooney if he gets hurt, or I think it would be an open competition between Tardif and Long as to who is the right guard. But that gives them some depth. So we already talked about center, and now you bring in Orlando Brown to be your left tackle, and your right tackle very well could be Lucas Niang, who opted out last year as a third-round pick a couple years ago, or your right tackle might be the second-round pick. You get 2 of them yet in this year's draft, and tackle does seem to be a pretty deep position, at least in the first 3 rounds of the draft, according to experts out there. So the Chiefs, this is really interesting, because the Ravens general manager, this is like many Ravens fans and Ravens people, and the follow the beat, the media for Baltimore, thought that they would get more than what they got out of this deal for Orlando Brown. They thought they'd get a top 15 pick for Orlando Brown. Instead, they settle for a first-round pick. They really, in essence, they're getting a first and a third. They're getting a first and a third, and the Chiefs get a second back. Because I'm not overly worried about, and a fourth. They do get a fourth. So they get a first, a third, and a fourth, and the Chiefs get a second back, which a second is better than the fourth. And I saw this. They have point systems on what picks are worth. Every single pick is worth a certain amount of points all the way through the very end of the draft, at the end of the 7th round with the Mr. Irrelevant as the last pick. And the equivalent, as this was graded out, the equivalent value that the Ravens or the Chiefs ended up giving up, to get Orlando Brown was basically the first round pick.
Yeah.
Everything else kind of cancels itself out. The Chiefs getting a second rounder, giving up a third and a fourth. The Chiefs get a sixth. The Ravens get a fifth. The bottom line is, when you figure out the points of the picks, the value of the picks, and there's a system, in essence, you can get all caught up in they got a third and a fourth, and we got a sixth instead of a fifth, and we got a second, and we gave up our first. You can get all confused by that all you want. But if you want to simplify it, in essence, when you put it all into a pot and you mix it up and cook it, what comes out is the Chiefs gave up a first-round pick for a starting left tackle who's a Pro Bowler at the age of 25. I'm going to tell you something. The Chiefs would not have got that guy at 31 if they kept that pick coming up on Thursday. So this is a great trade, in my opinion. The fact they didn't have to give up 2 number one picks is amazing to me to get Orlando Brown. And on top of that, you weaken the Ravens, although they were going to depart with him anyway because he wanted to play tackle. Mm-hmm. They wanted to play elsewhere. And the Chiefs get a guy that's in his prime of his career. He's going to protect the blind side of Patrick Mahomes. So now you got a Pro Bowl. In essence, you got a Pro Bowl left guard you picked up, a Pro Bowl left tackle to protect the blind side of Patrick Mahomes. You picked up a veteran that's a good player at center in Blythe who played for the Rams, who played, you know, run a similar offense as the Chiefs. And then at right guard, you get Tardif or Long ends up being your right guard. That's an improvement. And then and right tackle is maybe the one spot you got to figure out. And you got two second-round picks. You can address right tackle in the draft and still have another second-round pick to get, in my opinion, athletic linebacker, or perhaps you get a wide receiver, or you get a corner. I think defensively, if there's a really good edge rusher out there, I think the Chiefs might take him. But the Chiefs, remember, picked up the Reed guy from Seattle. They think Chris Jones can play defensive end at times. So there's their other edge rusher to go with Frank Clark. I'm sitting here, and I'm a Chiefs fan right now. If I like Lucas Niang and Rimmers to hold down the right tackle spot, the Chiefs might not even draft a tackle at the 58th or 64th overall pick in the second round.
I don't think they will.
They might not. Yeah, and so then you have to sit here and go, well, what positions would they go with? I'm telling you right now, I would love them to get an athletic – ball-hawking linebacker. I mean, a guy that can run sideline to sideline. The Chiefs lack some speed. Anthony Hitchens is long in the tooth. He doesn't have much left, I don't think. Willie Gay, you know, I think a full offseason is going to help him tremendously. If you get another linebacker to pair up with Willie Gay, because I think Willie Gay is going to turn out to be a good player. I do. Then you have two young linebackers for the future, and then you've got Chris Jones up front, and then I think they'll walk from Frank Clark after this year unless Clark is tremendous. Because they got to figure out how they're going to keep Matthew. If Matthew gets through this year unscathed, I think at some point you're going to see an extension for him. Eventually, you're going to have to tag Orlando Brown. I haven't looked up the contract, but according to what I read, he'd be the Chiefs who have him this year, and then they could tag him next year.
Yeah.
So they have player control for at least 2 years. So you're going to have to give him a good chunk of money if he plays like he has been. So there's only so much money to go around and so forth, although the cap should go up once we get back to a normal year in the future. But this is very interesting how the Chiefs have to go about things, because – I think they have a need at linebacker. I think they definitely would like a talented wide receiver, because I'm still not sold on Hardman being your number two. They like Pringle a lot, although he's had some injury problems. I still think they need to find another tight end as an heir apparent to Kelsey and groom a guy in that spot, that they could get that guy maybe later in the draft. But the two second-round picks, it'd be interesting. What two positions? Like, if you're the GM now, what two positions do you draft? Based on the best player available at every position that you need is available at 58 and 64, okay? What I'm saying is back a second tight end, wide receiver, right tackle, safety, corner, linebacker, edge rusher, defensive tackle. I don't care. Say they're all equal. The best player at all those spots is available to the Chiefs at 58 and then at 64. What two positions are you taking?
I mean, our linebacker's probably – up there now.
To me, it's got to be one of the two.
And then, I mean, if it's somebody like you said that's right at the top, you love them. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to a linebacker and wide receiver, right?
Right.
I think they need another corner without Breland, and because I don't think he hasn't.
Well, Snead will replace Breland.
Yeah.
You got Ward on the other side. You got Fenton. Yeah. I mean, they got corners. I mean, they could get another one, though, and I think they will.
At some point in this draft, I think they'll get a corner. I don't know if they'll get it that high, but
right.
I mean, I'm not, you know, safety you feel like is pretty solid.
You got Thornhill, Matthew, and Sorensen. And they got Armani Watts, though.
Watts. I mean, you feel like safety's good.
I think so.
Linebacker. I mean, really, it's a linebacker for me. I
agree.
For sure. But I do like Willie Gay. But it's never going to hurt with Hitchens getting older, like you said, to find another one, right?
Yeah.
And if Willie Gay gets hurt, too, then so linebacker is probably at the top of my list. They got flexibility, basically, in my mind, is what I'm thinking.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Like, they could go any way they want.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't
that's
think
what
I'm
this trade
accomplishes.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like go wherever you want, and I'll probably like it because you've done everything you needed to do up to this point in the offseason. I feel like, obviously, to get your line where you want it. I mean, there's no question that's been the focus of the offseason is the offensive line, and it had to be.
Yeah.
That was very evident. Not even just in the Super Bowl, but leading up to
it,
there might be some issues there going forward. And so now you've addressed that, and now you're kind of just greedy with what you want, right? You just want you want that athletic guy at linebacker. You want some depth at these positions. You just want like a freak wide receiver that maybe you can steal in the second round or something like that. And And so it is. It's kind of an embarrassment of riches. I think probably when other teams are looking at the Chiefs, right, they're like, mm-hmm. what are they? They don't even need anything. They're set.
It seems like
from
it.
From the outside looking in, sure. I guarantee you that's what people are saying.
Sure.
But then you go find a guy like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and it's like, oh, man, he fits perfect with what they mm-hmm. want to do. So, that, I mean, that's you just got to find guys like that no matter what the position is right now for the Chiefs in this draft because, I mean, they've still got plenty of picks to do it in and find guys that they want.
The Chiefs have 6 picks in the draft starting on Thursday, but they won't draft on Thursday. That's the first round only. So it takes some of the drama out of the first round on Thursday for a Chiefs fan, but I'm sitting here going, who cares? You got a Pro Bowl left tackle, age of 25. That was your first round pick. You just happen to know it ahead of time.
People need to understand that, too.
Yes.
It's like, well, the Chiefs gave up a first round pick.
I said the same thing about it.
They didn't give it up.
No.
They got something in return.
I said the same thing when the Chiefs
is their first round pick.
When the Chiefs traded for Alex Smith, everybody's like, we gave up a second round pick for Alex Smith. I said, no, you just got a starting quarterback established. That's better than a second round quarterback you would have drafted.
Yeah.
And I mean that was your second round pick.
Most people, I think, like the trade as Chiefs fans.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of them that are just don't understand the concept of Orlando Brown is your first round pick and
yes.
he is a way higher value than 31. Yes.
And he's in the league a few years and proven himself. He's a proven commodity. Any draft pick is not proven at all.
Yeah.
They have the 58th and 63rd overall pick. I missed it by one. So I was going off on my memory bank. As I get older, I mess up. So second round, 58th overall, and then 5 picks later at 63. I think linebacker needs to be one of those two. That's my opinion. I agree with you. I think the other position, like you said, they have flexibility. This is what I think they're going to do. I think they're going to take a defensive player and a wide receiver. That's what I think they're going to do with these 2 picks. I think wide receiver's deep. I think corner's okay, too. I think it's decent depth and position. I think the Chiefs are going to take a corner or a linebacker or edge rusher with one of those 2 picks and the wide receiver with the other. And then I think in the 4th round, because then they don't have a 3rd rounder, they traded that away to Baltimore, their 4th round pick, which you can get good draft picks. We saw Snead. Wasn't Snead a 4th round pick last year? So yeah, I think Snead was a 4th round pick.
Yeah.
I looked that up. I think he was a 4th round pick. So the Chiefs have had good players they've drafted before in the 4th round. Jared Allen, if I remember right, was a 4th round pick. Jamal Charles was a 3rd round pick. So the Chiefs can get good players in the 3rd, 4th rounds. Even in 5th round, you can get a diamond in the rough. I could easily see the Chiefs getting a wide receiver and then a linebacker, corner, edge rusher as the other pick. And then at the 4th round, if they didn't take a corner, they're going to take a corner with the 4th round. You see what I'm saying? Like if they take mm-hmm. a linebacker and a wide receiver, then I think they'll take a corner in the 4th round. Or if they
Snead
take
was 4.
He was, yeah, yep. See? And I think the Chiefs know that they can coach up some players and they can get a steal on a corner. And I also think the Chiefs probably think they can find a good lineman somewhere they can develop as well. Because you can get, I mean, there's lots of linemen that are really good that were not even drafted or late draft picks. So, I mean, Orlando Brown was a 3rd round draft pick for crying out loud, and now he's worth a 1st rounder.
Mm-hmm.
So that just tells you what you need to know. So if I'm the GM of the Chiefs, I'm thinking linebacker and maybe wide receiver with my first 2 picks, and then I'm thinking corner or an edge rusher in the 4th round. Now maybe they might go pass rusher and linebacker, and then they'll go corner in the 4th, and then go wide receiver and try to hit somebody in the 5th round. Who knows? Because wide receiver is deep. It gets deeper almost every year because more and more teams throw the ball so much.
Mm-hmm.
And the NFL has become a passing league for the most part. But you're right. They've got a lot of flexibility here. Here's the other thing the Chiefs do. They still have 6 draft picks. They can still trade down or up. I mean, they could trade down and get a pick.
I mean,
they could trade up.
Second round draft
you could
picks.
Trade up you back in the 1st round.
Trade back up. I don't know if somebody values those spots
right.
that they've already picked.
Yeah, you could give a second
like
and a 4th for the 1st round.
They can wait around for one of the guys that they're looking
Absolutely.
At. The board knows nobody else can take this guy.
Right.
I mean, you can move it back up, get rid of those.
Well, Brevich has shown that they're not afraid to trade, obviously.
Yeah.
They could easily trade. They could trade a 2nd and 4th to move up to the top of the 2nd round to get somebody. Because 58 overall is late 2nd round, by the way.
Yeah.
And then 2nd to last pick in the 2nd round is 63. So those are late 2nd round picks. But they could easily package it by 2nd and 4th and move up to the top of the 2nd or even back in late in the 1st round.
Yeah.
The Chiefs have some flexibility. And, well, you know, what are the obvious glaring needs? The fact that you and I can't immediately tell you what's the automatic need now tells you all you need to know about what great spot the Chiefs are in. Because people are going to say, well, they need a right tackle. I think they have plenty of flex. I don't think you draft Lucas Niang as a 3rd round draft pick to be a backup. So I think
they got
Luke,
Rimmers for backup there.
Right.
I mean, they're
They got plenty of linemen.
They don't need to draft a tackle.
I don't think
I mean, if they do it late, whatever.
Right.
But.
And if they do, fine. If there's a guy they really like in the second round, then the guy falls down to him and he's a really good tackle and they say, you know what, I think he's better than Niang, and you load up and you put him at right tackle, so be it. I'm not going to be opposed to it, but I don't think they're going to take a tackle in the second round. I mean, I think Niang and Rimmers, that combination will play right tackle. And by the way, Wiley is on the team too. Mm-hmm. Wiley can, you know, like I said, he wasn't good in that Super Bowl, but he can fill in a pinch to get you by for a game at right tackle. You can cover up one deficiency.
Yeah.
Okay. But you can't.
When you've had
two, and that's what happened in Tampa Bay.
Entire offensive line.
Right. You know, in Tampa Bay, the Super Bowl.
Center, I mean, at some point, something has been shuffled there on that line. And
my point is Tampa Bay, the Super Bowl, you couldn't cover up two deficiencies on each edge. But you can cover up one. You can add an extra blocker on one side if you got guys like Orlando Brown and Tooney handling guys one-on-one on the left side. Mm-hmm. You can cover that up for a little while until Niang is ready to go. So I'm like you. I don't think they're taking a tackle in the second round with either one of those picks. And so then it opens up really, honestly, any possession. I don't think running back or quarterback they need to worry about. But after that, they could go anywhere. They could go anywhere. They could go get a tight end at the second round pick, or they could get tight end in the fourth round or fifth round looks enticing to me. It could be a good one that falls down there. Kelsey was a third round pick, if I remember correctly, or even fourth round. Kelsey was, I think it was third round. Kelsey fell because of injuries and his attitude, because he had all the potential in the world.
Yeah.
So there's a guy that's going to be a Hall of Famer that was a third round pick out of Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So think about that. Your left tackle now is a third-round pick. Tooney was a second-round pick, if I remember correctly. Your center, he was a low draft pick. Tooney
was a third.
Yeah.
So I have all the linemen written down.
Okay,
here,
good. Well,
talked about this.
So
before.
We got a third at left tackle. We got a third at left guard. Blythe.
Actually, I don't have Blythe written down yet. Sorry.
right guard is Tardif. He was what round?
Tardif was sixth round.
Sixth round.
Yeah.
And your right tackle, let's say it's Niang, is third round.
Yeah.
There's not a first-round pick on that line, and everybody tells me that the Chiefs' offensive line is a ton better than at the end of last year.
Yeah.
So you don't have to draft guys.
And they got rid
guys.
Of the guys that were the high picks.
Right,
like
yeah.
Fisher's
Schwartz was a second-rounder.
One overall. Mitchell Schwartz, second round.
He's a free agent pickup.
You know, Assembly, unfortunately, had an injury. He was a second-round
right.
pick.
Right. So
Wisniewski was a second-round pick at one point.
At one point, but free agent with the Chiefs. Yeah. So. You got guys that you're trading first-round picks or getting free agency, spending a lot of money on guys that weren't even first- or second-round picks in the case of Brown and Toomey, and those are your two biggest acquisitions. So you're going to sit here and tell me the Chiefs can't find a really good tackle in the fourth or fifth round? You're telling me the Chiefs can't find a really good tight end in the fourth round? And Kelsey's a third-round pick. Jamal Charles was a third-round pick, if I remember correctly. He's outstanding mm-hmm. running back. I mean, you can fill needs later in the draft. It doesn't always have to be your first- and second-round picks. Now, the odds that they do better, probably statistically, yeah, your odds are a little bit better. But, I mean, for crying out loud, Tom Brady was a sixth-round pick, people. So let's go back to that again. If I'm looking at what the Chiefs have here, they could easily go, they could get a corner in this draft, a linebacker, they can get an edge, they could get an edge rusher, they could get a wide receiver. If I said tight end, maybe I'm redundant. I already said that. Tight end, wide receiver, corner, edge rusher, linebacker. There's five. They have six picks. Now, granted, not all these guys. Usually your sixth-round picks are going to be special teams players, maybe even your fifth-round picks. But they got Legarius Sneed as a fourth-round pick last year, and he looks like a steal. So
he was a steal, absolutely, right now.
Absolutely.
So far. I mean, you can,
well, Tyreek Hill in the fifth round.
A steal already for what he did his rookie year.
Tyreek Hill might be a Hall of Famer. He was a fifth-round pick, and they took a chance on that one. Kelsey's a third-round draft pick. Look at these guys. I mean, think about this for a second. Look at the guys the Chiefs have on their team again. Let's go over it again. Orlando Brown's a Pro Bowler, third-round draft pick at left tackle. Toomey can easily be a Pro Bowler again. He has in the past. He's at left guard. Your tight end, who's going to be a Hall of Famer, is a third-round pick. Your wide receiver, who's one of the best in football, is a fifth-round pick. You don't think draft is important? But it's important beyond the first night of the first round.
Yeah.
It ain't about the first and second round. It's about picking up guys and finding guys of value and being better at scouting and development than other teams. And that's why the Patriots, out year after year, for so many years, despite always drafting at the end of the first round or trading out into the second round and not having first-round picks, always seem to be good. How was that? Because they drafted good. They drafted the right guys. They developed them. They got some decent free agency guys, some bargain bin free agent pickups. They didn't go out and spend tons of money on free agency any of those years. They got Randy Moss for a steal because nobody wanted him. He was a cancer. That worked out good for a while. So the Chiefs, they have been drafting, for the most part, fairly well. I mean, Chris Jones was a second-round pick. Let's remember that. There's your stud on your defensive line. He was not a first-round pick. Mm-hmm. And then the key free agent acquisitions, you know, signing Tyrann Mathieu and Frank Clark. Granted, you gave up, you know, picks for Clark. We know that. Mathieu is a free agent. And, of course, you traded up the biggest one. You traded up, you had plenty of draft capital to move up 17 spots to draft a guy named Patrick Mahomes. And you got Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who's a running back that should be good for another 3 or 4 years. Shelf life's kind of low on a running back, but he fits pretty good. I mean, the Chiefs got all kinds of flexibility. And Brett Veach, once again, congrats. I mean, just he's doing a wonderful job. He's doing a wonderful job.
I just keep seeing, like, all the posts about Brett Veach from the Chiefs, you know, like, all, you know, like, this guy is king, basically. Like, yeah. can't do anything wrong. And everything. I just remember back when the Chiefs hired, and I think a lot of us thought the same thing.
Andy like Reid's lackey.
It's an Andy Reid yes man right here. Yes. Like, I don't know if this is what we'd need. And then, like, you're just like, whatever, I was wrong.
Yes.
Keep doing what you're doing, Brett.
Yes.
I will eat crow with barbecue sauce.
Absolutely.
Let's move on.
Absolutely.
Let's keep going to the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
Let's win them. Not get embarrassed like last year, but.
I hear you. And by the way, for all those people put together your mock drafts, all that happened got blown up to smithereens when the Chiefs made that trade with the Ravens. Mm-hmm. That blew up your mock draft just like that. That's why I think they're kind of silly. The Falcons reported getting calls about wide receiver Julius Jones. Isn't that his name?
Julio.
I knew it was wrong. It didn't sound right off the tongue.
Julius Jones was a running back for the Cowboys.
Ah, there we go. Julio Jones, a wide receiver of the Falcons. He's very talented, but he's had some injuries the last couple of years. They're getting some offers. Here, there you go. Chiefs just traded their 2 second-round picks for Julio Jones. Now we got something, right? Yeah, okay. It will be interesting because there will be some guy that will slide down that the Chiefs will have a chance to get that people are going to be all excited about. I mean, the Chiefs still got 2 second-round picks. That's still of high value. They got a fourth. They should be able to get three. The Chiefs should be able, if they draft right, to get 3 quality players with those 2 seconds and a fourth. And right now, the Chiefs don't need 7 quality players in the draft like the New York Jets do. The Chiefs need, honestly, they need 3 good ones, maybe 2, then a decent one, and then a couple guys that can do some special teams work. That's really all they need. They need 4 or 5 guys, a couple to fight for maybe some spots and push some other guys, and then 2 guys to probably, honestly, your second-round pick should make an impact. And if one doesn't, then hopefully your fourth round does. And, well, I mean, what was the draft picks last year for the Chiefs? Do we have that pulled up there?
I can get it.
Pull that up and pull up the Chiefs draft picks from 2020. Because Sneed, there we go, I got it up here. Okay. Helaire was a first-round pick. I think we could say that that was a decent pick. We're not saying he's a superstar yet, and he probably will get better in year 2 in the system. Willie Gay Jr. I still think could be a steal, the second-round pick from last year. I think not having the offseason with COVID-19 really hurt his development. I still think you can say that was a good pick. Now, maybe it won't. We'll find out. Niang, I mean, you don't know. He opted out. I mean, a fourth-round pick was Legarius Sneed, and, he's turned into like a steal of a pick in the fourth round. And, oh, by the way, Mike Dana made this team. He had a few plays last year. He was a fifth-round pick. So think about this for a second. Last year, the Chiefs had five picks.
They had Bo Pete Keys in the seventh.
Okay, I don't count that one. Seventh round, you can't expect much.
Yeah.
So the Chiefs' 5 picks last year, the ones that really truly count. Running back, he's your starting running back. Your other guy could very well be a starting linebacker this year. He's your second pick. Your third-round pick could be your right tackle. And your other is going to be a starting corner. And the fifth-round pick is a complementary rotational defensive pass-rushing guy, which he's not, you know, fifth-round pick's probably not going to be a guy who goes out and gets 10 to 15 sacks a year. He's a serviceable player. That's really a good draft. That's a really good draft. You get a running back that fits the mold of what you want to do. You get an athletic linebacker that's going to be a potential starter. You've got a potential starter at right tackle, and it's hard to judge that pick because he opted out. Had he played, we'd have a better idea of where he was. Your fourth-round pick absolutely played great, Sneed. And your fifth-round pick, I mean, all 5 of those guys made the team. They didn't get cut. They didn't. They weren't on practice squads. Those guys all.
The team that just won the Super Bowl.
The team that just won a Super Bowl had, honestly, 2 impact players, Helaire and Sneed. One guy opted out. You can't count. Another that was serviceable replacement. And Willie Gay, who has potential, who was starting to play more and then got hurt the last week of the regular season. That is a good draft. And they only had 6 picks. This year, they only have 6 picks. And they've got really it's the same draft for the Chiefs this year, except no third round pick, and your first round pick is now a late second round, and you've got the same second round pick from a year ago. I mean, if you can do the same thing this year and get an athletic linebacker with one of your second round picks, you get another corner that's a steal, and then you pick up a lineman, whether it's a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman, you get three guys that can really contribute to this team this year. This will be a great draft as well, because the Chiefs don't have to fill a whole bunch of spots. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. And again, you'll go back and look like, okay, that's what you use draft force to build for the future too. And,
yes.
And so they've put themselves in a position to do that.
Man, they have. They really have. I know Baltimore fans. I know one that is a fan I know that he texted me. He's not a diehard Raven fan, but yeah. He texted me. He goes, what the heck are we doing? He goes, we can't beat you as it is. Now we gave you you finally were
Lamar
vulnerable.
Jackson's best lineman.
That's right. He goes, he was a right tackle for Lamar. He'll be left tackle for Mahomes. He goes, we just traded away a guy in his prime for basically a 31st pick in the draft. He goes, you were vulnerable. Your offensive line was vulnerable. You finally had some kryptonite. You lost, and all you did was get Toomey, and he goes, and you got Kyle Long and Tardif. He goes, you've replaced your whole line with every one of them is better than what you had last year.
Yeah.
I said, well, except right tackle, we don't know yet. Yeah. And he goes, yeah, but Schwartz was hurt. And he's right. Schwartz only played five or six games. I mean, Niang at right tackle could be a big improvement over Andrew Wiley playing right tackle, whoever we had, Rimmers, when Schwartz was out, remember? So, the Ravens can't beat the Chiefs as it is. They just made the Chiefs stronger. And help fill a major need for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And the Ravens honestly didn't get as much out of this deal as they probably should have. So I love it. I was shocked when I saw this deal. I was like, the Chiefs only had to go one first-round pick? Are you kidding me? I figured we'd have to give up this year's late first, and then next year would be a late first. I figured two first-round picks. I'm amazed by how much they didn't have to give up a lot, I don't think.
No. I think that probably the biggest surprise for me.
And the Ravens didn't have to trade him either. They could have kept him.
Yeah, they could have kept him. And then the flip side of that is, how did we get their second round pick?
I know.
You literally have lost nothing.
No.
Because like you said, I mean, the equivalent is you gave up a first rounder.
Yes.
But you didn't give up a first rounder. You got a better talent in return.
Yes.
Than what your first rounder would have been, and what probably the Ravens will get in the first round.
Right.
And then they got the second round on top of it. I'm like, what are the Ravens doing? Like, your second round pick, keep that and get the first round pick from the Chiefs. Like,
I was stunned the Chiefs got a second round pick.
That second rounder was surprising for me. I agree. And I was like, maybe a pick swap, you know.
Sure.
Maybe you can get 58 for 63.
Yes, right.
And move it
right.
And force the Ravens to go down in the second round.
Right.
But to actually get their second round pick
that
and
was
keep
stunning.
Your 63 was like, I mean, sign me
think,
up every
think,
day.
Think about
of course, I think the Chiefs can say we have leverage because he's only on a 1-year contract.
Yeah.
When all along they know
right.
he's not even be here more than 1 year. Like, we're not going to make this trade and not try to work something out long term with Orlando Brown.
Right. Well, obviously.
At 24, now right. 25 when he plays.
Right. But let's put it this way here. The Chiefs, in essence, moved down the draft 26 spots to get a Pro Bowl left tackle who is just turning 25 next week.
Yeah.
Sign me up, man.
Every day.
Every day. All the time. Every year for the draft. Man. And on top of it, it's a team that's trying to knock you off in the AFC. Mm-hmm. You just made them weaker, even though they were going to have to probably unload him anyway. But you're the one that benefits from them unloading him. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. NBA, you know, Kevin Durant, I think, can just wake up and do whatever he wants, even if he's hurt and he gets healthy, comes back, and it's like he didn't miss a beat. Did you see what he did yesterday? 33 points off the bench, just like that, 33 points. Mm-hmm. And they played one of the best teams in the league, the Phoenix Suns, and then that's 128-119. Kyrie Irving, 34 points, 12 assists. Devin Booker had 36 for the Suns, and Durant had 33 first game back. If the Nets are healthy, I hate to say it, but the Nets are healthy. They're winning the East. Because the Sixers, I'm not sold on the Bucks. The Sixers, I just don't think have enough firepower. I wish they did, because I cheer for the Sixers and Embiid. But, I mean, the Nets, I think the only thing holding the Nets back from making the NBA Finals, like, I hate to say this, is health. Harden's not even back yet.
Yeah.
The Hornets beat the Celtics 125-104, and the Blazers lost the Grizzlies 120-113. John Morant, superstar in the making, 28 points for the Grizzlies. The Wizards, they beat the Cavaliers 119-110. Bradley Beal with 33. The Hawks beat the Bucks 111-104. Giannis with 31 points, 14 rebounds, not enough. Pacers beat the Magic 131-112, and a horrible, horrific injury for a player for the Magic, Devin Kennedy. Man, I tell you, I just don't want to see it. You just don't want to see it. Broke his ankle. It's gross, gruesome injury. We were talking about this last night on the way back from Kansas City, that these gruesome injuries in sports. You know, Paul George, I thought his career might be over when he had that horrible injury in the Olympic trials, and then he ended up her exhibition, and then he ended up being better player coming back eventually and got his big contract. And then, you know, Gordon Hayward had a really horrific injury too. He came back and got a gigantic contract with the Hornets, came back, played well, but he's had injury problems, been injury prone since then. Caris LeVert had a pretty good injury at one time, if I remember right, and he's made it back. And these guys can make it back. They're young and they can overcome this stuff. But boy, that injury yesterday to this Candy kid who just made it up from the G League and was playing for the Magic, it was a very gruesome injury. They had to cover up the leg. They didn't want him to see it or the cameras to see it. It was that bad. He was bleeding, which was really weird. Usually when you break an ankle, break a leg, it doesn't necessarily bleed per se, you know, where you can see it. Very gross injury. And then last night, the Warriors beat the Kings 117-113. This guy named Steph Curry had a decent night. 37 points that the Warriors go a game above 500. And then speaking of gruesome injuries, did you see the UFC fight where the Weidman, his leg snapped on his first leg kick 17 seconds into the big fight? And then he stepped on it. He didn't even, I mean, it already snapped, and then he stepped on it. It gave me the heebie-jeebies.
I saw it once,
and I don't want to see it again. But the guy he was up against, it was a major fight in UFC. It was a marquee fight. And the guy he was up against, he was a class act afterwards, talking about, you know, hey, I wish him nothing but the best, and he will get first shot. If he comes back healthy, he gets first shot at taking me again, because we were robbed of that tonight. And I thought that was really classy how he handled the whole thing. But, man, it was a gruesome injury. And you've seen Anderson Silva do that in UFC. Oddly enough, here's the crazy thing. You wonder about things sometimes, you know, karma or whatever you want to call it. Coincidence? Is it fate? Anderson Silva was fighting the Weidman guy so many years ago, and he was one of the best fighters UFC. And he did a leg kick on Weidman, and guess what happened? He snapped his leg. It was gross, and then he had to come back. And now it was Weidman in a big fight against this other guy. I forgot his name. And his first leg kick snapped his leg, and it was a very similar injury.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. USC is not for the faint of heart, that's for sure. And that was a very gruesome injury, just like the basketball injury we saw from the Orlando Magic as well. So the Chiefs get a new left tackle. The Royals are in first place. Man, I tell you what, if you're a Chiefs fan and you're a Royals fan like Dusty and I all at the same time, it's a good day.
Yeah.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.